standing ground. We shall fight in the field.
Statsbøttekottet.
Vår slogan
er mer demokrati, mer åpnet og mer statsbøttekottet.
Hei og velkommen til en ny serie om komparativ politikk-delen av Politusen. Med oss i studio for hele denne serien postdoktor Kathleen Jennings.
Postdoktor Jennings foreleser for KP-delen av Politusen og amerikansk. Vi har derfor bestemt oss for at denne serien spilles inn på engelsk.
God fornøyelse.
Statsbøttekottet.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Statsbøttekottet with me, Lars, and Andreas.
This is one of four episodes in the summary podcast series in Poll 1000 for comparative politics. This podcast series will try to summarize the syllabus on the subject. The series is not intended as a substitute for reading the syllabus, but as a supplement.
During this series, we will cover the topics key concepts and state formation, Möller's control logic, forms of rule and ideology, and state structure and governance.
For this series, we are proud to have Kathleen Jennings, postdoctor and lecturer in Poll 1000, as our guest. Postdoctor Jennings has studied both at Stanford and Oxford, and she took her doctorate in political science at the University of Oslo. She's lecturing here at NTNU in Poll 1000, Comparative Politics. Welcome to our podcast, Postdoctor Jennings.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Thank you.
The theme for this episode is state structures. We will briefly cover state structures, governments, constitutions, and elections.
Most countries have a form of constitution. Why do we view that as important?
Constitutions are basically the roadmaps for government. So constitutions lay out how power is organized and divided in that system. Constitutions are also very important in terms of rights. So constitutions tend to lay out what rights citizens have. So like freedom of speech, freedom of religion, these kinds of things. And they also lay out usually how those rights can best be protected in terms of the sort of role of the judiciary within the overarching balance of power. So constitutions are very useful and necessary in setting out how government is organized, how it will function, and how power is balanced between all of the parts. Again, usually the executive, legislature, and judiciary. So that is why we have constitutions.
Checks and balances is an important term in politics generally. What is checks and balances and how does it relate to different democracy?
Yeah, I mean, checks and balances is basically a way of ensuring that no one branch of government gets too powerful. So basically, again, you have these three main branches, the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary. They're organized in different ways. So parliaments are organized differently than presidential systems. But they all have some kind of balance of power and some kind of checks on that balance. So the whole point of checks and balances is the way that the different institutions within the government can constrain each other. So how does the legislative keep the executive in check? How do does the judiciary or, you know, judges keep the executive or the legislature in check? They have certain powers, certain ways of exercising their own authority that also acts as a kind of control on the others. So it's a way of keeping any one group within government or institution of government from getting too powerful, which then in terms can lead to these kind of governance issues, eventually democratic backsliding if it goes too far.
There are two main types of structures that a state can be organized by. We have unitary and we have federal. Can you explain what like these systems are?
I mean, unitary, so that's basically describing how power is distributed throughout the state. So how many levels, we're basically saying. So unitary is implied by the name. It's you basically have one main level. You have a central government where power is concentrated. It's not to say you don't have other levels of government. So like in Norway, it's a unitary state. You have, of course, local. You have governments at the communal level. Some cities have their own municipal governments. But the powers that those governments control are quite constrained. So the decision-making, the sort of main powers, all the sort of legislative lawmaking functions are at the central level. Federal state is essentially the opposite. You have a federal or a central government with all these powers. That's where, for example, the president, the Congress in the U.S. and the Supreme Court are all parts of the federal government. But then you have these sort of replication of this at the state level. So every state in the United States, for example, has its own judiciary, its own executive, usually a governor, its own legislative. And so these two levels sort of coexist. And then the lower level is sort of, in a way, unterlocked, or not unterlocked, but it's sort of, it can be overruled by the federal level, but usually if there's a conflict, but usually they are coexisting. And why do we have this very confusing, complex form of government? It's basically because some states are very big, they have very diverse populations, and it's easier to govern such big, diverse places using different levels of governance because it allows for a little bit more flexibility and a bit more diversity in governments than it is to rule from kind of the central government doing it all.
We have also China and Russia are authoritarian rules, but they could also be fit into these two, into federal and unitary. China in unitary and Russia in federal. What are the differences between these two authoritarian?
I mean, China is only a unitary state because it's an authoritarian state, or maybe vice versa. Because China is obviously a vast country with a very diverse population. So if, according to political scientists, China should be a federal state. China would be kind of easier to govern if it were federal. But that's assuming China's a democracy. China's not a democracy. China's an authoritarian state. It's a one-party state. And it's a lot easier to rule in an authoritarian way if government is unitary, because you have fewer levels to control. You have much more kind of control over the almost kind of very hierarchical sort of from the local level up in China. It's one kind of line and it's very hierarchical. So it actually gives them greater control because it's a unitary state. Russia is a federation, which again, political scientists would say makes sense. It's a very, very big country, quite diverse. So it makes sense as a federation. But Russia is actually a federation that acts like a unitary state because Putin has very deliberately re-centralized so much power, because again, it's easier for an authoritarian to rule in a unitary system. The levers of power are kind of concentrated. So Putin has very deliberately re-centralized, taken back a lot of the powers that were kind of divided between the sort of central and federal, or central and sub-state levels, which means that Russia is technically a federation, but effectively is a unitary state because power is so concentrated at the central level and specifically in Putin's hands.
All of these systems we've described here, they are ruled by someone. How is a unitary system usually ruled?
Oftentimes with a president, but I would say that the closer link is between parliamentary and presidential systems. So parliamentary systems are almost uniformly ruled by prime ministers. Presidential systems are obviously ruled by presidents. And Germany is an example of a federal state with a prime minister, with a parliamentary system, whereas Brazil, the U.S., all these other places are examples of, you know, a president state or president and a federal state. So, I mean, federal and presidents tend to go together, but it's not a very hard and fast rule. The more sort of foolproof way of thinking about it is that if you have a parliament, you will have a prime minister. If you have a presidential system, you will not have a parliament in the sense that you will have a legislature that is not electing or connected to the executive. In that,
there are many different forms, as you said. You have the president, you have the prime minister and minister. What is the, in modern democracy, what is the role of this executive position?
So, I mean, the executive is the head of government. In presidential systems, they're also the head of state. Those are two separate roles that in presidential systems are combined. In parliamentary systems, it's the head of state is usually the monarch or some kind of ceremonial role. It's not usually that important. The prime minister is the head of government, the executive. And I mean, they are the ones who execute. And so in the executive branch, regardless of whether it's parliamentary or presidential, you have the leader whose function is to lead, whose function is to be the head of the branch that is also sort of creating policy and implementing policy, working with the legislature to pass laws. And they have control of executive agencies. So they have control, the president or prime minister has the kind of ultimate authority over the executive branch, which is to say military, the foreign minister, all the ministries, foreign ministry, you know, labor, blah, 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 blah. They all work ultimately for the president or prime minister. So that is the executive branch of which the president or prime minister is head. In parliamentary systems, the executive comes out of the legislature, which is to say that you have a winning coalition or a working coalition, at least in the legislature, that then sort of appoints the executive from its ranks. Sometimes people don't have to be in parliament, but they're kind of, you know, connected to those parties. So basically the legislature makes the prime minister and in most cases can break the prime minister, which is to say that there can be a no confidence vote and then the executive will have to step down, get a new government. In presidential systems, those two processes are delinked. You have a president who's elected in his or her own election, separate from the legislature. And the president and the legislature obviously can be the same party can rule in both, but they don't depend on each other for the president cannot be fired by Congress or by the legislature, sometimes in very extreme cases, obviously. But as a general rule, general politics, the president doesn't depend on the legislature for his or her job and they cannot be fired. So those two are, so you therefore have a much stronger division of powers in a presidential system than you do in a parliamentary system because you don't have that linkage.
You touched on it briefly there, but the executive controls the bureaucracy, right? What is the bureaucracy?
Chrissy, we're usually talking in a much more specific way than kind of the general language where you talk about bureaucracy to sort of indicate anyone who sort of works for government. When political scientists talk about bureaucracies, we're focusing, as you say, on executive or bureaucracies in the executive branch. And so here we're generally focusing on the permanent sort of fausse consultants who work in oftentimes in these ministries. So in the foreign ministry or in the sort of, you know, education ministry, the people whose role is to advise the political appointees, which is to say the ministers or the Staatssekretär, and then to also sort of help devise and implement policy. So these are the people who usually dedicate their careers to these jobs. They usually have extreme amounts of knowledge, and they oftentimes, if they're good at their job, can either push forward or block policies that they like or don't like. Sometimes against the will, they can sometimes work against elected politicians because they have this institutional power and institutional knowledge to keep things sort of. So, for example, when Siv Jensen became the finance minister of, you know, a decade ago or whenever it was, there was a lot of concern about this sort of outsider politician coming into this very, very difficult job. But there was such a belief about the power and the knowledge of the bureaucracy that people were kind of like, well, they know that it can't go too wrong. They will keep her sort of on the straight and narrow. And so it actually proved. So the bureaucracy is very powerful. It's very knowledgeable. The flip side of that is they're not elected. And so the question is whether they have too much power in the system that is not accountable.
To track back to the different systems for a moment, with what we're seeing, what we saw in the U.S. with Trump, is it reasonable to assume that presidential systems are more vulnerable to democratic backsliding, more vulnerable than parliamentary system?
I think it's very hard to answer that with a firm yes or no, but I would say that because democratic backsliding is typically associated with a strong leader, like executive leader, and because presidential systems tend to give more power to the executive than parliamentary systems, where power is usually more evenly divided, then in that sense, institutionally, it could be that presidential systems are more vulnerable to backsliding. Because if you have a very strong leader who can't be fired by the legislature, then they can potentially build up their power more easily in the context of a presidential situation system than they could in legislature. But I wouldn't say that that's a hard and fast rule.
We touched on it briefly with the leaders of a country, but every country has some form of a legislator. Why do we have it? Like, what is their purpose?
So the legislature's purpose within the system of government is to make and pass laws. But they also have another function, which is the key democratic function, which is to represent the people. Legislatures are the most direct representatives of the people in a democratic system. And that's not because they're the only ones directly elected. You can have presidents who are directly elected. But the president has a much broader constituency that's millions and millions and millions of people, whereas legislators have a much smaller constituency. And that's most the case in these legislatures where you have one member per district. Like in the UK, every member has a constituency and he or she is only responsible for that constituency. But even in the kind of Norwegian system where you will have kind of a list of candidates that is sort of regionally organized, they're not quite as localized as you would see in those other constituency type systems. But there's still a much more sort of localized connection between the MP or the sort of stortingsrepresentant and the people they represent. So two main functions of legislatures are to make laws and to ensure better representation or representation for the people in government.
What common forms of public rule do we have? Like we have the parliamentary system and the more Congress or federal system?
Yeah, so I mean, what you would say, this is a very unsatisfactory term, because you would say parliamentary presidential system, even though presidential system, president is the executive. But the distinction again gets back to how is the executive elected? Is the executive elected separately in its own election, that is to say a presidential system, or does the executive come out of the legislature, that is to say a parliamentary system? Those are the two main forms of organization. But with that major distinction, there are a lot of other sort of implications. So it's most common in the European context, taking Great Britain out of it, that if you have a parliamentary system, you will have a what we call proportional representation electoral system, which is to say that when you have the election, the number of seats that a party gets in parliament is roughly proportional to the number of votes they get in the country. Again, you have exceptions. The UK is a parliamentary system, but they have what we call a majoritarian or first past the post electoral system, which is to say that in each sort of valkrets constituency, whoever gets the most votes wins. That, so you could end up having a very close overall vote count, but a very lopsided result, because if one party wins a lot of very close elections, they will have a lot of disproportionate amount of power in the legislature. And then in presidential systems, you very rarely have proportional representation. You tend to have, again, this majoritarian first past the post type system. You always have that for presidents because you only elect one president. You can't proportionally represent the president. But also even in the legislatures, you tend to have a system where at least one branch of the legislature has this first past the post. And it could be if you have two branches, the second branch will have a different, maybe more proportional. But so the point is that you have different forms of organizing legislatures, and that in turn has implications for things like the electoral system.
So why is there often an upper and lower chamber?
it again hangs together with the way the system is structured. So if you have a federal system, you almost always have two chambers. Because you, and let's use Germany, for example, or I'll use the U.S., that's an easier example. You have the lower chamber, the Congress, or the House of Representatives, I should say, where you have every congressperson elected by their district. And then you have the upper house, the Senate, where you have many, many fewer senators, and it's two per state. And the reason why is because it's a federal system, and so you have different you have another whole level of organization below the central level. So you have all these state governments, and every state also gets to have its own representation in this upper body. So it's that hangs very closely together with this sort of notion of a federal system. Whereas if you have a unitary system, you very rarely have more than one chamber because they don't have to account for these other units. They don't have to account for a bunch of states or a bunch of, you know, provinces or whatever that have their own sort of governance. So the original thinking behind an upper and lower chamber was kind of anti-democratic in the sense that if we're thinking to how it evolved in the UK, the lower chamber was kind of for the masses, was kind of for the mob in a way. And the upper chamber, which was connected to the aristocracy, the House of Lords, was essentially a control on the lower chamber to make sure that they didn't do anything too crazy. That was kind of the thinking, that was very much the thinking behind the U.S. system as well. The Senate was kind of a check on the worst impulses of the lower chamber. And that is something that in the UK has changed quite a bit. The Lords has not as much substantial power now. Most of the power, almost all the power is in the Commons. But in the sort of US system, still you sort of see that a lot of the kind of, I would say, crazier things that happen in the lower chamber, the much bigger, more quote-unquote representative chamber. And then the Senate is seen as a more kind of responsible body. But in terms of why you have two, it's very closely connected to, is it a unitary system or a federal system?
This was a little bit about state structures and governance. There are three other parts of this series covering key concepts in state formation, Müller's control logic, and forms of rule and ideology.
Thank you very much for the talk, Postdoctor Jennings. This conversation has certainly helped me a lot.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
And then we wonder if you have any like general tips for the exam or the exam time.
I mean, my general tip would be, besides do the reading and look at the lecture notes, which are very comprehensive, the slides, there's a lot of words, would be not to get hung up on very small details. Without saying what's going to be on the exam, I can say that there's not going to be any kind of trick questions that if you haven't read page 72 of Müller, you're not going to be able to answer the question. Like, we're not trying to trap people. What we're trying to do is test sort of if you have a solid understanding of some of these basic concepts and the sort of basic sort of what we've been discussing here in terms of institutions, in terms of some of the historical stuff, in terms of some of the methods, and can just sort of relate to these things in a sort of comprehensive enough way that shows that you have actually understood what's in the pensum, what we've been talking about in the lectures. But you don't need to know like all the very, very, very details. The main thing is to be able to tell a story about how all these things hang together and to understand how the different parts of these systems work sort of in concert or sort of pull against each other.
We hope this has been helpful for the exam study, and thank you for listening. We want you to remind you again that the curriculum podcasts cannot replace reading, but are intended to supplement the busy exam period.
We also recommend following along because this podcast series has several other parts.
Statsbøttekottet.
Mer demokrati,
mer åpenhet og mer statsbøttekottet.